Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dirt Boy Podcast, where we're here to talk about a variety of interesting topics. I am your host, Rugged the Lovable Huggable Dragon, and we're on episode number 13 about my spicy hot takes. As always, if you enjoy my content that you're listening to, please feel free to give it a good review on Spotify or whatever platform you're using to listen to my sweet and sexy voice. If you ever want to be part of my podcast, either as a voice guest or if you just want to ask your questions for me to read out loud and to answer, feel free to click on a few of the links I provide within the episode of my podcast. The best way to reach me involves my Twitter account at RuggedTheDragon, all one word, along with my Discord channel that you can freely join. I hope to hear more from everybody as time rolls on. So let's get into the main topic here, shall we? So the first thing I want to talk about are spicy little hot takes, right? Little opinions, big opinions that I'll explain later on that just may not always connect with everybody, and they'll sometimes even come at me with pitchforks and knives and torches, you name it. So without further ado, let's get into the main topics of my spicy hot takes. Now, mind you, a lot of these are video game based, some of these are movie based, and others are just really small things that I want to discuss. So I may not list every single hot take I could think of, but if I ever have more in the future, I'll make a sequel episode. But my question to everybody before I begin is, what are your personal hot takes? And I will read them in the next episode. And it'll be interesting to hear from you guys, if I hear from anybody, that is. I'm not that popular, so who knows? We might get some people. So anyway, now, my first opinion about Call of Duty multiplayer, right? Everyone talks about what their best multiplayer game ever is, right? And which ones are the worst. The majority of people will say the best multiplayer games of all time were Modern Warfare 3 or Black Ops 2, while the worst ones are, like, Infinite Warfare or Advanced Warfare, right? Now, my opinion is a little different. It's going to make people a little upset, but here we go. So, World at War and Modern Warfare 2 were my most hated multiplayer games. Ooh, it's a hot take, hot take. Now, don't get me wrong. I love the campaigns for both games. World at War had a gritty campaign involving the Second World War. Modern Warfare 2 was more of a, I guess, like an action movie, but still had some crazy scenes. World at War had an amazing zombies mode. I just loved it. It was unique and it was just so good, and they built so much upon it. And Modern Warfare 2 had Spec Ops. So why were these games terrible in terms of their multiplayer? So World at War, it felt like Call of Duty 4 with a modified version where it was a World War II skin slapped on top of it. It didn't look good at all. It was terrible. The reload animations in general were just terrible. Ugh. It felt like every gun was like rusted on the inside, or someone stuck a lot of sticky gum inside of the magazine areas, right? Every time you reload, right? Every other game you reload, it was like very smooth actions, right? In World at War, every time you reloaded, it felt like you had to like yank the magazine out of the gun and slap it in there, and it was jagged. Ugh, just the animation. Ugh, that was like the worst thing ever. I don't want to see it again. The graphics were unsaturated. I understand, well, it's gritty World War II. Why would you want a colorful game? Colorful games are a good thing. It doesn't matter what time period you're in. Colorful games are a good thing. This game was so gritty that sometimes even the player models would just mix into the backgrounds of the bushes, and you couldn't see anybody. You just couldn't see that well. And the worst part about the World at War multiplayer, aside the bad sound effects, oh god, don't want to get into that. The weapons sounded like cap guns you buy from a 7-Eleven. The worst part about this game was that it just did not innovate anything with the multiplayer. Like, there was no new, like, there were some new perks here and there. Some other perks were taken out, but majority of the game was just the same in terms of the perk placements. You had still had stopping power, you still had Juggernaut, you still had Last Stand, or it was called Second Chance in that game. And the worst part was that a lot of the other perks that I did not list were useless. Who would want to use Shades? For those who don't know, have never played this game. So stopping power gives you extra bullet damage. Juggernaut gives you extra health, right? Those are good. Camouflage allows you to hide from enemy spy planes, keeps you invisible on radar when those things are flying around. Again, a good thing. Shades, it protected you from those flares that blind you, right? Which didn't really blind you that much in the first place, and no one really used them at all. Like, most of the people just used gas grenades. So you're telling me you want to sacrifice your extra damage potential, thus giving you an advantage in combat for a perk that protects you from an equipment that barely affected you in the first place and nobody ever used. Explain that logic. I just don't understand that. And the worst part of other worst part about this game, it seems like every part of this game is worse, was the tank maps. So the tank maps, So tank maps in World at War were much larger than your normal 6v6 maps without the vehicles, right? They had to be big. So the map can actually allow the tanks to travel in, right? You had Berlin, an area in Berlin that takes place with the tanks. You had some grassy field and all that. Problem with these maps, if you didn't have the tank, it felt like Battlefield. And not in a good way either. You were in the open all the time. People were just hiding in houses or wherever they can hide. And they would just sit there and camp and snipe people. If you didn't have a tank, you were dead. If you had a tank, no one really could take you out. It was kind of like off balance. Now, I understand tanks were powerful, but I knew how to take them out, right? Everyone would rely on launchers. That's not how you do it. What you did was you throw a satchel down and hope the tank runs over it, and then you blow it up. You can one-shot a tank by doing that, if you're careful. But it wasn't the fact that people couldn't take out the tanks. It wasn't the fact that the tanks were overpowered. It was just the size of the map. No, I hate big maps in Call of Duty. They don't work. I don't care. Unless it's a mode that's specifically designed for it. Let's say Battle Royale, obviously. Ground War. That's another good one, right? But not regular 6v6 multiplayer in a giant map. It gets nowhere. Why would they do that? I don't understand that. And World at War was just, like I said before, it's a good campaign, good zombies. Multiplayer is where it just tripped and fell in its face. But I will commend Treyarch for their next attempt, which was Black Ops 1, which was, they learned their lessons. They were like, okay, well, we didn't innovate that much. The weapons sounded like crap. Some of the maps were terrible. So let's just fix everything. And that was what Black Ops 1 was. I love Black Ops 1. Not perfect still. I mean, that's another hot take, but they learned their lesson and I appreciate them for that. Now I'm betting everyone's going, why in the hell did you say Modern Warfare 2 was the worst multiplayer game of all time? Modern Warfare 2 is the best, you say. It was so fun. Everything was overpowered and it made everything feel good. That's pretty much how everybody on Reddit actually reacts to this whole opinion piece that I have. So, why was Modern Warfare 2 bad? So let's go into the things that it did well first. Okay, it innovated with fixing up the perks. Now, originally, the blue slot perk tier would just be equipment-based. You know, you would have, like, satchel charges instead of your regular equipment. Or actually, no. Actually, satchel charges added to whatever equipment you had. So, there's that. Or it changed your satchels to RPGs or let you carry an extra grenade. In this game, they just said, you know what? We're going to put these perks in the blue tier, these perks in the green tier, and these perks in the blue and the red tier, right? And just mix it up so everybody can, like, have different setups. So no longer was the perk tier involving the blue ones just equipment-based. They were anything, really. So the other thing I liked was the fact that you had extra kill streaks, right? You had, instead of, now in the older Call of Duty games, you had just 3 kills for the UAV, which detects opponents on your minimap, 5 kills for an airstrike or artillery barrage, and 7 kills would either summon a helicopter if it was Modern Warfare, or dogs if it was World at War, right? That's all it was. It was just 3, 5, 7. Very simple system. Modern Warfare 2 decided to innovate by saying, hey, we still got 3, 5, 7, but what if you wanted to have an extra streak at 4 kills? Or maybe this streak at 6 kills? Or maybe more streaks after 7? Maybe after 8 or 9 or 10 or 11 kills, you could summon more powerful streaks. So if you were really skilled, you can rely on the heavier, more rewarding streaks, while if you are not as skilled, maybe, or you just prefer not to have offensive streaks whatsoever, you can just stick with the lower ones. Good system. I like that. That was a good idea. Now, I am also going to say that the graphics in this game were a lot better. Now, I wouldn't say that's a multiplayer feature. That's just the whole entire game in general because of the better-looking engine. Game looked more crisp, it was just more detailed, and obviously it was colorful. I liked it. Now let's get into why the game was so bad. So, everyone's like, oh, well, everything was overpowered in this game. That's a myth. That is a big myth. There were overpowered features, but it wasn't the entire game. It's just that the overpowered features within the game were constantly exploited. You think about it. I'll name quite a few. There were, like, in terms of non-glitches, there were the dual-wield lever-action shotguns called the 1887s, right? So before the patch, if you dual-wielded these shotguns, you could almost snipe people with them. One-shot kill from, I'd say, 30 meters away. You can one-shot kill people with these two shotguns. They patched it, but people still ingrained... It's like pretty much burned into our minds right now, the dual 1887s. It was so, like, overpowered, no one ever forgot about it. We never did. Other things included the one-man army danger close combination. I hated this so much. This broke the game. So, for those who don't know, because they never played Modern Warfare 2, there were two perks. One that was called one-man army, and the other was called danger close. One-man army would sacrifice your secondary weapon in exchange for this bag. When you swap over to the bag, it lets you select a class, and you could swap to that class on the fly. So let's say you were using your assault rifle, and you realize the enemy's too far away for it. Swap to a sniper class, take them out. Oh, now you're going into a close-range area. Swap to a shotgun class, and there you go. Well, and then again, Modern Warfare 2 didn't have shotguns as primary weapons, so I guess an SMG would do. So it seemed good on paper that you would adapt to the situation with this perk. On paper, it was good, but in execution, it was horrible. People realized that if you had an assault rifle with a grenade launcher, and you use the one-man army, you can swap to the same class you were using and get all your ammo back. So then people would realize, if you apply danger close, which would increase explosive damage, you can shoot your grenade launcher at people, kill them instantly, because there was almost no counter to it. There was blast shield, which protected you from explosive damage, but it was an equipment item that you had to manually activate that obscured your screen and took away your HUD. Didn't even protect you anyway. So it was a useless piece of equipment that should have been a perk. It should have been a perk, just like other games. But in this game, it was a piece of equipment, and it didn't make sense to me at all. People realized you fire two shots of your grenade launcher. All right, you're out of ammo. Swap to the same class, get all your ammo back. Repeat, repeat, repeat. They could be a human mortar. So they would basically aim this weapon in the air at a specific spot so that when they fire the grenade, it lands at a very hot zone on the map that everybody would be at. And by constantly spamming these explosives, you get enough kills to stack towards your streaks. Now, in this game, if you earn a streak that's lethal and you get a couple kills with it, it will reward you towards your next streak that you have on the list. And then that rewards you with the next one, so on and so forth. So basically, you can get 4 or 5 kills and earn a lethal streak. That lethal streak gives you 2 more kills. That next lethal streak is even more deadlier. By the time you even realized it, you've only gotten 5 kills and you hit somewhere in the map. And on top of those 5 kills, these streaks have given you at least 10 more. So the game is basically playing itself. I mean, what kind of game is enjoyable when it plays itself? That doesn't make sense to me. It's a first-person shooter, not a streak simulator. But that's what Modern Warfare 2 essentially was. Oh, and it got worse, too, because there was a high streak that required 25 kills, which could end the game even if you were losing, and you'd still win. What? For the longest time, the game-ending nuke was never a thing in Call of Duty. Modern Warfare 2019 decided, hey, let's bring it back. No explanation. Just people remembered it. They remembered it fondly, so let's just bring it back because money. No, I'm just kidding. I know every business wants to make money. I'm not one of those people that says Activision's greedy, blah, blah, blah. No. That's a little joke, though. The point stands, yeah, it was a bad feature. I hated it. I still hate tactical nukes. I don't know why they're still in the game. At no point should you go into an objective game, for example, and say, okay, well, let's play objective. Let's win this game. And then still lose because one guy got all these kills and didn't play objectives at all. What? That's like us playing a game of football, right? And just because a cheerleader did this quadruple flip that nobody could ever do, that team gets the win despite the fact that we were killing them. Like, that doesn't make sense. Why? Why are we rewarding this kind of gameplay? Now, you could argue, well, if it's Team Deathmatch, then he deserves it. Not really. Because if that person gets, like, 25 kills in a row and gets a nuke, but his team is still losing because the coordination on the other team is more efficient, it's the same thing applies, right? It should be about which team was better overall instead of one person determining the outcome based on the fact that they got a nuke. Anyway, I kind of rambled on that. So let's get on to the next part, right? So we're going to go from Call of Duty to The Legend of Zelda, and that is Breath of the Wild. Wasn't a great game. Oh, God, I can already hear it right now. Everyone's going to be like, oh, God, no.
Why did you say Breath of the Wild was not a good game? It wasn't a great game, you say? That game was amazing.
I'm just hearing, like, the devil breathing down my neck right now from all the angry Zelda nerds, right? Now, I love Zelda. I played pretty much all of them. I love the Zelda series. I could go back to them and just enjoy them every single time. Breath of the Wild, however, it was boring. It was boring. Yeah, you had an open world to explore. You could do different things and all that. Collect a lot of stuff. But the story was weak. What's the story? Okay, spoilers here. You're Link. Ganon beat you up. You wake up 100 years later because you forgot to set your alarm. And you fight Ganon. That's it. Now, simplicity is good to some degree, but this is Zelda here. Zelda needs some kind of substance, right? You had story elements even in the first game. The first game, like, understandably, the first game had a simple story because it was NES times, right? But at least there was a story, right? The Zelda got kidnapped. She had the Triforce piece. She split into 8 parts. You're the hero. You gotta collect 8 parts of the Triforce, defeat monsters, go for the bad guy, rescue the princess. Simple, right? You might argue, well, that's the simplicity of Breath of the Wild, right? That's a good thing, right? Well, it's like, because we're used to more intricate storylines as time went on, so going back to basics wasn't exactly a good thing, in my opinion. Some people might like it, some people don't. I didn't, in my opinion. What else? The world itself was just empty. It was empty. It was just I understand a big world is harder to make when you include more intricate areas, but, you know, it's like, Zelda's always been renowned for having a very unique world. It's so unique to the point where you could basically remember it in your head. You know that the east side was freaking desert area. You knew that the west side here was a village. You knew the north side was a mountain. You knew the south side was like a forest or whatever. It changed it game to game, but you knew the actual world was vibrant, alive, and memorable. But in this game, I'm like, they're like, okay, what are a couple things that stuck out for me? Well, Hyrule Castle, and maybe Death Mountain. But that's it, really it. There was a couple other areas here and there, but they're all like scattered. And this might other be another hot take as well, but you know what other world was pretty empty? The Wind Waker. The Wind Waker was a great game. I loved it. I just didn't like the overworld for that game because it was like 95% ocean. I understand that's the major plot point of the game, but it didn't work out too well. I can understand the ocean being a major part of a game, but please make the islands a lot bigger. Maybe a huge landmass here and there, and then you travel in the ocean to explore another major piece of landmass. You know, the game basically had these tiny little islands that were just mostly optional. Mostly optional. You had some islands that were important that had dungeons on it, but everything else was just like, oh, you found this island. Okay. And? I didn't care. Same thing with Breath of the Wild. Oh, you discover this bridge. Okay. Oh, look, there's a dragon. Ooh, that's cool. Anyway. the enemy variety was terrible in Breath of the Wild. You fought moblins. And I think that was it, right? No, I'm kidding. I know there were also those centaurs. You had blight bosses. I understand, but you had more variety of enemies in any other Zelda game. This one was just relatively the same. Didn't really do that well in that department. The other biggest thing I hated were the weapons in that game. There was a cartoon that basically describes everything I hated about that weapon system. You grab all these weapons, swords, sticks, arms, yeah, bony arms, I know, you have to play the game to understand that. And you're thinking, okay, I'm all set. I got all these weapons. I got these shields. Let's start attacking enemies. So here's how it goes. Take this. Breaks. Oh, no. Take this. Breaks. Oh, no. Take this. Breaks. Oh, no. You constantly had to swap out your weapons. And that meant pausing the game just to go through a menu. Or some people say you could just hit the button and swap between weapons, but it was so tedious because sometimes there'd be a weapon where you don't want to use it because it contained a certain element that you needed, like a fire sword or an ice sword or whatever, right? You wanted to use whatever weapons that were least important so that when they break, you won't have to get angry because you don't want that fire sword to break because you need that for puzzles. But the fact that these weapons constantly broke, it was too much excess in the game. Too many times where I had to pause the game to swap weapons or shields or arrows or even heal myself. In the older Zelda games, you go in and attack, right? You could pause the game sometimes to drink a potion, whatever. That's fine. But for the most part, when you attack things or you explore, you just regain your health by collecting hearts. You go and you replenish your magic. Easy stuff. You just go around and smash things and you get your stuff back. This game, like I said, required you to constantly pause the game if you got hurt, eat an item that you've either cooked or just found, and you just eat it right there. It's like, basically, here's how the combat in the old games was like. It's like, okay, strike, strike, kill the enemy, yeah, yeah, got my hearts back, kill an enemy, yeah. Breath of the Wild was like, strike, oh, I took damage, pause, timeout, heal up, time in, /, oh, my weapon broke, timeout, time in, just constant. Like, a battle that would normally take 10 seconds to complete now takes 10 minutes because of all of the menu hopping that you had to go through. While I'm roasting Breath of the Wild here, the dungeons were terrible because they all looked the same. Interesting puzzle mechanic, but still, they all looked the same. Even the bosses looked the same. They were all the same versions of the Blight Ganon forms, right? Just different mild forms here and there. But that was it. Like, you didn't have, like, in Breath of the Wild, all you had was Water Blight Ganon, freaking whatever, Fire Blight Ganon, Ganon made of freaking cornbread. I don't know. But it was always a form of Ganon. Whereas in the older games, you had a boss that was a giant lizard with a huge tail and a giant metal mask that you break apart with a bomb or your hammer, right? That's memorable. You have a boss where it was a woman. You put her in light, and she transforms into this fiery monster with floating heads. That was memorable. And Breath of the Wild gives us these generic bosses that look the same and pretty much have the same last name to them. And there's only four of them. Granted, I know Majora's Mask had four bosses too, but Majora's Mask was a better game because the bosses always differed. You had one boss that was a tiki warrior of some kind, right? Is that what they're called, you know? You had one that was a bull, one that was a fish, and two worms that was annoying in the 3DS version to fight, but nevertheless, memorable fight. You recognize them. People would argue that Breath of the Wild introduced so many good things. I'm not going to disagree with certain good things they added. There's more freedom, I understand. More costume selections, I understand that part. The majority of the game for me was just not enjoyable. And I pray that Breath of the Wild 2 is not going to repeat that mistake. Please, learn from the mistake here. I don't keep the game the same just because certain people liked it. Take in the feedback from the worst reviews and realize if it makes sense and then change it. That's what I would do. Make a more memorable world. Less item breaking. All that. That would make things 10 times better. Holy. Alright, so, yeah. Enough of roasting Breath of the Wild. I apologize for Zelda fans if I angered you, but, if you, like I said, if you ever want to ask me questions, or you just want to give an opinion about this whole thing, let me know. So, next topic is about Star Wars. Now, my hot take is this. Within just the new trilogy of movies that we got, episode 7, 8, and 9, I think the best one was The Last Jedi. It's a hot take, I know. The Last Jedi. Now, I haven't seen these movies in a long time. I probably have to rewatch them all again to figure out my opinion. But the reason why I liked The Last Jedi the most was because it was the most different movie of the trilogy brought us something that we were not expecting. Because the first movie was basically a rehash. Oh, by the way, spoiler warning for anybody here. If you have not watched the new Star Wars trilogy, I suggest not listening until later on. But anyway, spoiler territory here. You have been warned. So basically, The Force Awakens was episode 4 all over again. You have a main character who is in the desert, who eventually learns about the Force and a lightsaber and meets somebody, takes off on the ship from the desert planet. Sound familiar? Sounds like Luke finding out about the Force, taking off from his desert planet from the same Millennium Falcon, right? And I know it's nostalgia, but when you basically rehash the same exact story, just in a slightly updated format, that's not innovating. And the movie after The Last Jedi, The Rise of Skywalker, it was a submission to the whims of the unpopular masses of the Star Wars community, right? They were like, this isn't Star Wars. I want something more predictable. And that's what the directors did. Like, okay, you know what? We were doing too many things differently in this movie. So, you know what? We're going to make things predictable in the last movie. We're going to give you an epic battle at the end and everyone's happy. And nobody liked it still. Like, why did you submit to the whims of the fan base? Just make your story. If you think the story is good and everyone else thinks it's good, do it. Unless, of course, the fans really do have a point, which I don't think they did when it came to bashing The Last Jedi. Now, I like The Last Jedi, again, because it was unique. We had the main character from the episode 7 make a huge mistake. He wanted to show that he, Poe Dameron? He wanted to show that he was a good pilot, that he was for the Resistance. But he made a huge mistake by sacrificing the entire bombing fleet at the beginning. Yeah, he got the job done, but he cost so much. He was reckless. And I understand being reckless is a good thing here and there, but he was way out of line. And I don't understand why people were scrutinizing one of the other characters for basically, what do you call it? What's the word I'm looking for here? Punishing him. They were right. The guy, I understand he's a good guy. He's a great pilot. But he goofed up. You know, you gotta learn from your mistakes at times. The other thing I liked about this movie, although I haven't seen it in the forever, so I can't remember everything on top of my head. The main thing I also liked was how Luke Skywalker himself, he was basically went from optimistic, I am the Jedi, like my father. Now he's like, I don't care about the Force anymore. I don't want to teach new people. And it's understandable why later on, because you know, he made a mistake too. Luke Skywalker, supposed to be a Jedi all about peace, kind of broke that vow because he's human, right? He's not a perfect character. He's not supposed to be always the hero that we know and love. He made an honest mistake. When he saw Kylo Ren with the evil that was within him that Luke remembered, Luke obviously was scared. That's something that you're not supposed to be in a Jedi. You're not supposed to feel that many emotions, right? You're supposed to let go of certain things. Plus, fear is the path of the dark side, too. That dark side kind of took over Luke in a way, I guess. Because when you're afraid of something, that's not good. And Luke tried to kill Kylo Ren. And Kylo Ren defended himself. And that's what caused Luke Skywalker to realize he made a huge mistake. And that fell over to other things, and it caused the entire Jedi Order that he was trying to build to be destroyed. Right? He failed. And I like that representation. Yeah, the blue milk scene didn't really make sense. Whatever. But the best thing about The Last Jedi was the fact that, unexpectedly, we had a major villain in that movie. We thought he was going to be introduced in this movie and then continue on in the third movie for a climactic battle. However, Kylo Ren was like, nah, I'm going to kill you right now. Psh, kills him. Right there. And we're like, wait, what? What? And then the best thing happened was when the main villain's bodyguards came in. The red armored, I don't know what they're called. The red armored Sith-y looking, bad red colored Darth Vader lookalikes with armor. They attacked the group. But instead of a Jedi fighting against an evildoer with a red lightsaber, like they did in the first movie, they went back to back and worked together. Name a Star Wars movie, main movie, not TV show or anything, where the main villain with a red lightsaber doesn't fight a Jedi, but rather teams up with them. Think about that for a second here. Episode 1, Darth Maul versus the Jedis. Whatever. Episode 2, it was Darth Tyrannus, or we all know him, Sir Christopher Lee. May he rest in peace. Fighting against Anakin and Obi-Wan. And then you had Anakin becoming Darth Vader, a Sith Lord, fighting against his master. Granted, he didn't have a red lightsaber yet, but he was still an evildoer. You know, Darth Vader and Obi-Wan in Episode 4, Luke and Darth Vader Episode 5, Luke and Darth Vader in Episode 6, Kylo Ren versus Little Lady. I forgot her name already. It's been a while since I've seen these. You're going to hate me for this, because I'm like, how do you not know their names? Well, I'm sorry. Rey. Okay, Rey versus Kylo Ren. Episode 7. Episode 8. Oh, Kylo Ren and Rey just teamed up. What? Wow. That's unexpected. Now, we did get a fight between Luke Skywalker and Kylo Ren. That wasn't really a fight, but the whole point wasn't for him to show off his skills or to beat him up or anything. The point was to simply preserve the future. That's why he said, I am not the last Jedi. Rey is. That's officially him passing the torch. Oh, love that scene. Ugh, it just tingles me up inside, right? That's why I like The Last Jedi. Now, I'm sorry if I don't provide too many details. I'm sorry if I ramble on too much or repeat certain things or don't even remember people's names. Yeah, I don't remember Rey's name because, I mean, seriously, this is a sequel trilogy. They're not that good in general. But Last Jedi, I thought, was the best, in my opinion. All right, so moving on to another series called Resident Evil. Now, I'm pretty sure this is common knowledge. I don't know if this is a very spicy take here and there, but I thought Welcome to Raccoon City was a good movie. No, I'm kidding. No. Raccoon City was horrible. Welcome to Raccoon City was absolutely despicable. I hated that movie. No joke either. I hated that movie. It was god awful. Like, it was Raccoon City. Didn't even have buildings in it. It was like a small town. The actor who played Leon, I don't know why they ruined Leon in that movie. Again, spoilers for those who didn't see this movie, but again, you've been warned. But I'm kind of spoiling it for you anyway, so you don't have to see it because it's absolutely god-awful. Well, let's introduce a couple of characters from the series and not see them again. They're just there. That's it. But I'm not going to ramble too much on that because my other opinion on the Resident Evil movies was that my favorite movie in terms of live action films that was my favorite was Resident Evil Apocalypse. Yeah, the one with Mila Jovovich. Is that how you pronounce her name? Mila Jovovich? I can't remember. Anyway, Alice. You know, those movies. This was the second film and it was released, I think, in 2004, I believe it came out. I was in the military at the time. So I went to a video store to buy the DVD, and I kept watching it on my portable DVD player, because when you're in the squad bay, you can't really have access to a TV, so you got to get what you can. I kept watching this movie over and over, because I just love the fact that they had Nemesis in it. Ugh, Nemesis. Raccoon City was actually a city. You had memorable characters. Even the guy who played Carlos was good. Now, granted, they changed certain characters around, like Nikolai was supposed to be a villain, but he was just some side character who just got infected and killed off right away. Like, what, really? You wasted the potential by not making Nikolai a villain like he's supposed to? Okay, that's weird. Another thing that made the movie really enjoyable was a big surprise was they introduced this original character named LJ, played by Mike Epps, right? He was like probably one of the best things about that whole movie. He sees this one zombie as he's driving, and he's like, GTA! He runs him over. But then he crashes his car because he sees, like, a female topless zombies, and he's like, what the heck? Crashes his car, oops. I was like, yes. And he was the one who actually survived against Nemesis. Every other member of the STARS team Nemesis was targeting were killed. This one guy, drops his weapons and surrenders, and Nemesis just turns away. Now, you could say that's kind of against what Nemesis is, because Nemesis is supposed to kill everybody. But the fact that he let this guy live, that just was like, what the hell? I mean, it didn't make sense, but at the same time, you kind of enjoyed it. You're like, wow, that guy is freaking lucky. But I loved it, right? And the movie ended exactly the way it was supposed to. The city gets nuked. Now, granted, you might think, well, they made Nemesis into like a little sweetheart. Oh, I remember you, Alice. I'm a monster now. I just want to protect you now and be a good guy. No, Nemesis is not a good guy. He's a freaking bioorganic weapon. He was created. Not this former lover that was now a beast and I'm going to be a good guy. No. I'd say that was probably one of the worst things about this movie. Aside from that, everything else I loved about it. I liked it. That's just my hot take about it. So my question to everybody is, there's so many questions I got to ask you guys. What was your favorite Resident Evil movie? Was it one of the 3D ones as well? Let me know. All right, here's another hot take. So we're going back to Call of Duty again. There's going to be a couple of these, by the way. So Call of Duty was never a casual game. It was never a casual game. When it comes to multiplayer, not one bit. Again, people are going to be like in my ear going, why did you? No, Call of Duty is casual. It's a casual game. But every time people say this, they never define what casual is. What makes Call of Duty a casual game? And everyone says, well, you got to sit down and you get off work and you relax and you have fun, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, it's competition. You're not always going to have fun every time. If I had to make Call of Duty in terms of a casual game, if I had to define what casual to me means, it's not about the game itself being designed that way that makes it so easy to play and so easy to win. Casual to me is going into the game and enjoying the ability to sweat my nuts off. In another way, I like to put effort, as much effort as possible, in order to establish a good form of competition. Not always going to win, not always going to lose, but if the game is fast-paced and aggressive and constantly challenges me at all times, I'm going to love it. See, people believe that Call of Duty should be, you sit down, turn on the game, you don't have as much of a competition against you, so that way you can always win and perform the best and call in the most streaks. That's their definition of what makes Call of Duty casual. That's everyone's like, oh, that's basically the fundamental aspect of Call of Duty, is that you have to make it like that. Mm-mm. Call of Duty is always sweaty. It was never casual. People never, you know why? Because people never treat it like that. Everyone wants to play the best. Everyone wants to be the best. Problem is, that's unrealistic. And the moment you realize this, the better off you are. Because if you lose, you know, whatever. It's a game. Now, I'm not saying that everybody's perfect. We all get angry. I've had my moments too. I get angry too. I rant here and there because some of the maps are not well designed or people play a certain way or I got bad teammates. Yeah, I understand emotions will happen. But I also understand that I can't control it either. If I'm losing, or I end up not doing as well, I'm not going to blame the developers for not making the game, quote, casual. No, not at all. The game at its core is about simple competition, right? Competition itself is going to be fierce. At no point is the game going to relax, take it easy on you so you can have a better time. Unless, of course, if you cheat by reverse boosting or modifying your stats in some way, that's a different story. But, like I said before, you know why I tell people, you know why Call of Duty is not a casual game? You want to know how you could tell? Take a towel, wipe off your brow, see how wet that towel is. Because everyone treats it like it's competition to the max level. It renders that whole argument obsolete. So, that's my hot take about it. My next hot take is very small, but interesting. So, I hate ketchup and mustard. I don't enjoy those two condiments. I know they're very common, everyone likes them, but I don't. I hate ketchup, I hate mustard. They don't taste good. But you know what are better than both of them? Barbecue and honey mustard. absolutely those two. I think those two condiments should replace ketchup and mustard by default. If you're ever at a restaurant where they offer you ketchup and mustard normally, they should be replaced with barbecue and honey mustard. Or give us four choices: ketchup, mustard, barbecue, honey mustard. Next hot topic is about the Marvel movies. I think that Phase 4 is bad. Phase 4 is terrible. I'm sorry. It is. It's just, okay. Now, Phase 1, we get the introduction of all the heroes. We're excited to see them, right? These are good movies. And they finally got to join together and beat the bad guy, Loki. Okay. Phase 2, a little weaker, a little darker, but still great movies. And we eventually got to another plot point where they all joined together to beat another, villain, right? Simple story, not as strong as the first phase. Great. Phase 3, we started getting into some really good movies, right? And then we finally got a two-parter finale to the entire Avengers movies, and they were freaking fantastic. Infinity War, not as much. Endgame was better. I liked Endgame. It had a good ending. That should have been it. And then Phase 4? Phase 4 kind of, it just felt like you beat the game, like all the main quests of a video game. And then after that, there were side quests to complete after that, but you really didn't care too much about them. That's what I feel Phase 4 is. It's just a bunch of unnecessary side quests that you never got to, nor do you even care about. I'm not saying all the movies are bad, like Spider-Man, for example. Those are pretty decent movies. But, you know, Shang-Chi, is that how you pronounce it? Not so great. Eternals was garbage. I heard Morbius wasn't that good. I've never seen it. But that's not part of the MCU, right? I don't know. And there was so much potential for Venom to be part of the cinematic universe, but unfortunately, I think they kind of denied that at the same time. But who knows? We got a little sneak of it, what happens in the one movie, so who knows? Maybe. I hear good things about the new Doctor Strange movie, but again, I didn't see it yet, so I have to make my own opinion on that. Now, aside the movies within Phase 4, you also had the TV shows. Now, part of Phase 4 was introducing us with a lot of shows on TV via Disney Plus. Like, you had WandaVision, Loki, What If, Hawkeye, for example, right? Now, WandaVision sucked. I hated that show. Loki was better. It was okay. It was better. What If? Eh, whatever. It was okay. And Hawkeye? Eh, same thing. Like, all these shows were meh, really. Didn't watch Moon Knight yet. I don't know if I will like it or not. Who knows? If you really want to impress me with Marvel TV shows, right? Daredevil and The Punisher. Freaking hell yes to those two shows, right? Those are what need to be focused on, right? Disney needs to go back to those shows, get the original directors, the original actors, and say, go nuts, please. Go nuts. I don't care if these shows are rated TVMA again. Go nuts, because these were the best shows. All these other Marvel shows that are coming out nowadays, they're not good. Like I said, Phase 4 feels like the side quests that you never completed, nor do you care about them. That's just my hot take there. For my next spicy hot take, this is a small one, involves Twitch. And I believe the ASMR category needs to be removed. I personally think that this category is nothing but girls with barely anything on, licking microphones for 9 hours straight. That's it. Like, that's pretty much leaning towards very provocative content. Now, I understand not every female streamer out there is out to show off their body. They're here to express themselves in the form of actual video game content, right? For example, let's shout her out. One of my favorite female streamers that I've encountered was Paradox Eva. She's been around for a long time, right? Great streamer. There's another furry streamer that I have also recently encountered was Fern the Heretic. Great streamers. I like them because they're here for the gaming content. I just don't understand why it's so intriguing to watch a half-naked lady lick a microphone for hours. And the worst part is that they're more popular than a lot of other streamers. Could you imagine that? Being as a streamer, be like, oh, I got these thousands of followers, and I play games, and I offer extremely good content, and I interact with my community very well. And meanwhile, you got some girl with like 5,000 or more followers, more than this person does, even though he puts more effort into his content. And you ask this girl, how did you get so popular? And she goes, I lick microphones for 2 hours. Anyway, so my last spicy topic for this day, once again, Call of Duty. I know, I like the game series. This is the third time I brought it up. But hear me out. This one is really spicy. Get ready for it. I think the cosmetic bundles that were introduced to us in Modern Warfare 2019 are the best things in Call of Duty right now. Okay. I'm an Activision shill who apparently loves microtransactions, right? I'm definitely an Activision bot, right? Not really. So, yeah, cosmetic bundles, for those who don't know, you spend anywhere from $10 or $20 or more than that to unlock in-game content that allows your character to have a different costume or a weapon variant that looks different and may have tracer rounds on it, right? It's cosmetic, doesn't interfere with the game at all. And people think that this is a horrible feature in the game. I think it is the best. But there is a reason for my opinion. So if everybody is going to lash out at me right now, please listen to my explanation. I enjoy these cosmetic bundles because of what we got in return. The first thing, DLC maps. They're free now. What happened was in the previous games, you had to pay for these map packs individually. Not every individual map. I'm talking about individual packs of these maps. You had to buy these maps or the season pass. So you bought the base game and you had to spend another $50 to enjoy more content. And even if you got the new maps and you love them, it was also interfering with the matchmaking because if you wanted to find games with new maps, not everyone was going to have them. Therefore, it limited the selection. It filtered out people who had the maps, and if you couldn't find a reasonable pairing in terms of connection, it would find people based on who didn't have the maps either. And that means that your chances of playing on this new content was sometimes limited. It depends on how many people bought the season pass or the map packs individually. So, glad that we have free maps now. The next thing we also got in return was the fact that we don't have any more supply drops. Now, supply drops, they were basically crates that you could buy or earn in the game, and they offer you a random reward. Now, people thought that this was pretty much borderline gambling. Some people said it was gambling, which I disagreed with. You were still technically getting something in return, but the problem was that what you were getting was not exactly what you wanted. You still got something out of it, but it wasn't something that you wanted. Right, I didn't like supply drops either, right? I didn't think they were gambling, but I did not like supply drops. And the fact that they are gone completely, and we got bundles instead, good on them for doing that. Free maps, no more supply drops. Best thing ever. I would rather have free maps and no supply drops if it means having these bundles, right? Because with the bundles, you don't have to pay for them. You don't buy a bundle, you're not going to be hurt by not having a certain bundle. And if you like the content and you want to buy it, that's on you, but it also may enhance your experience with the game. I've done it a couple times, right? If I think something looks really good, I'm going to buy it. And I would rather have that over spending $50 on brand new maps and not being locked out of content because of supply drops. So, once again, I'm going to reiterate, I'm glad the bundles are here if it means I don't have to pay for more maps and I get other content without randomization through supply drops, right? That's the reason why I love bundles. Do I agree with the pricing on them? Not always, but again, our money, and that's what we get in return. So, I take that over what I mentioned earlier. So with that being said, that about wraps up this episode of the Dirk Boy Podcast. Again, my name is Rugged the Dragon, and I appreciate those who listened to me ramble. If you have any suggestions on a new topic, you want to be a guest of the show, for example, or you just want to ask me questions, I implore everybody to participate. It not only helps me out, but it helps me feel better knowing that my friends and followers are being included in the show. So I'll see you all next time. Take it easy and be safe. Dirk Boy out.